Hello and welcome. You are listening to a 30-minute summary of loop engineering, the practice of designing the loops that carry an agent toward a goal on its own. It comes from a research wiki of 26 linked notes, and it is the middle of three versions. There is a 3-minute overview and a full audiobook of about an hour and a half. This one stands on its own. By the end, you should have the vocabulary of the field, a clear view of why verification is the hard part, the controls that keep a loop from becoming an unbounded bill, and an honest account of what nobody knows. There are 4 chapters. Let me start with the strongest objection to this entire subject, because the field is better understood through it than around it. A coding agent already runs a loop. It inspects the code base, makes a change, runs a command, looks at the result, reconsiders, makes another change, and continues until it believes it is done. That has been true since 2022. So what does an outer loop add beyond saying please keep going? One critic put it as, cron jobs have a funny rebranding right now. And a defender conceded the technical reduction is correct. At its most basic, this is a while loop wrapped around a model call. In this chapter, I want to do 3 things. Establish what the term means, show where it sits relative to the disciplines around it, and then answer that objection properly, because the answer is what the rest of this recording is about. Let us start with the definitions. Loop engineering is the practice of designing, specifying, and maintaining the agentic loops that carry an agent toward a goal iteratively until it reaches it. The formulations from different sources converge, but each stresses something different. One frames it as designing agentic workflows that guide agents toward user-defined goals with minimal human intervention. Lang Chain calls it the art of stacking loops. And Adi Osmani gives the one I find most useful as a criterion. Loop engineering is replacing yourself as the person who prompts the agent. You design the system that does it instead. That last one is precise about what gets automated, not the task, the act of asking for it. Now, the distinction that separates this from ordinary scheduling, and it is the line everything else depends on. An automation executes a series of steps. A loop has decision-making inside it. The agent actively evaluates whether the goal has been reached and iterates based on that evaluation. The key difference is the goal verification step. So if your loop cannot answer the question, is it done with something checkable, it is not a loop in this sense. It is a repetition. Now, where this sits, almost every source presents a progression of 4 layers. Prompt engineering is about how the task is expressed to the model. Context engineering is about which instructions, data, tools, and intermediate information are made available. Harness engineering is about connecting the model to an executable environment with files, software, memory, and feedback. And loop engineering is about how the system repeatedly observes, acts, verifies, and recovers. Each layer assumes the one below it. A loop over a badly built harness amplifies the harness problem. The most informative way to read that ladder is by failure mode, because each layer introduces one the others did not have. A prompt fails through ambiguity. A context fails through saturation and noise. A harness fails through poor tools. And a loop fails temporally. It does not know when to finish. Which is why verification is the central problem of this discipline and not an implementation detail. I should flag a criticism of the ladder itself. It is marketing as much as taxonomy. Each new layer tends to be published by whoever sells the tooling for that layer, and the pattern of X engineering is dead. Now it is Y engineering repeats a little too comfortably. The defensible version is more modest. These are levels of analysis of one system, not historical stages. You can have a loop problem and a context problem at the same time, and fixing one does not fix the other. Now let me answer the objection. The defender's response is that every serious criticism lands on weak loops, not on the discipline. Loops without a verifier. Loops with no halt condition or spend cap. Loops that still need unbudgeted human steering. And the substantive answer, from the one paper in this field with a declared method, is that the novelty is not the loop but the artifact. They call it a loop specification, and define it as a bounded, reusable artifact that a human designs and hands to an agent harness so the agent pursues a goal independently, rather than being prompted step by step. It has five components: a trigger, which is what starts it, a goal, which is what it pursues, a verification step, which is how it is checked, a stopping rule, which is when it gives up, and memory, which is what persists between iterations. That definition is what turns a vague argument into a checklist. A loop missing components is not a badly built loop. It is something else. Without verification, a repetition. Without a stopping rule, a billing risk. Without memory, expensive amnesia. Here is my own reading of the dispute, and I will come back to it at the end. Two claims get mixed together. The strong claim is that loop engineering is the next discipline and everyone should adopt it. That does not hold. The evidence is mostly vendor material, the only corpus is 50 cases, and even favorable sources say most people do not need this yet. The weak claim is that there is a set of design decisions, namely a verifiable goal, an independent verifier, named terminal states and an external budget, that determines whether a loop works or burns money, and it helps to have vocabulary for them. That holds, and it is valuable whether or not you call it a discipline. One more thing before we move on, because it grounds all of this. The technique that started the field is called the Ralph Loop, created by Jeff Huntley in 2025, and in its original form, it is a shell loop that feeds the same prompt file to a coding agent over and over. The name comes from a cartoon character who is not the sharpest but gets things done through persistence. Huntley's own summary was that dumb things can work surprisingly well. What makes it work is not the loop. It is that progress does not live in the model's context window. It lives in files and in version control. When the context fills up, you get a fresh agent that picks up where the last one left off. A programming language with its own compiler was built this way over about 3 months. But note what Ralph does not have. No verifier, no stopping rule, no budget. By the field's own definition, it is missing three of the five components, which makes it simultaneously the best argument for the field and the best argument for its critics. Let me recap. An agent is already a loop, so the objection is fair and the novelty is not the loop itself. What is new is the specification: trigger, goal, verification, stopping rule, and memory. And the line that separates a loop from an automation is the goal verification step, which means everything depends on being able to say what done and correct means. In the next chapter, that verification problem, which turns out to be harder than it looks. Everything in the previous chapter reduces to one question: when does the loop stop? If you cannot answer that in a way a machine can check, you do not have a loop. You have an expensive repetition. So this chapter is about verification, which turns out to be the whole discipline wearing a modest name. Three things. What makes a stopping condition verifiable? The ladder that orders verification by reliability, and why letting the agent judge its own work fails in a specific and measurable way. Let us start with the properties. A verifiable stopping condition has three. It is binary, true or false, not probably done. It requires no interpretation. The system can evaluate it without subjective reasoning. And it references something concrete. Something in the world has changed, a number reached a threshold, a list is complete, a test passed. The third is the one most often violated. A condition that refers only to the agent's internal state, something like, until the agent considers it finished, references nothing, and is therefore not verifiable in any useful sense. Some examples: until the code is good is not verifiable, until the test suite exits with status zero is, until the documentation is clear is not, until every link resolves and the build passes is, until you have covered the important cases is not, until coverage exceeds 80% is. The pattern is that the verifiable version names an observable outside the agent. And here is where most of the actual work lives. Designing a loop is mostly not writing the loop. It is converting a human objective, which is naturally fuzzy, into a verifiable one without betraying it. Three moves that work. Substitute a measurable proxy, The code is good because it passes the tests, the linter, and the type checks. Narrow the scope until it is decidable. Fix the bugs is not verifiable. Fix this specific issue and show its regression test passing is, or turn quality into quantity with a threshold. Each of those introduces a gap between what you want and what you measure. Hold on to that, because it comes back at the end of this chapter. Now the ladder. The most transferable contribution in this field is a 5-level scale that orders verification from most objective to most subjective. Level 1 is deterministic, an assertion, an exit code, a golden output, a test that passes, a build that compiles, an empty difference. Level 2 is rules and constraints, a linter, a schema, a policy applied over text. Level 3 is delayed field truth, evidence that arrives later, integration tests, a deployment, an actual customer response. Level 4 is model as judge, a score against a rubric, which is the model's opinion. And level 5 is a human checkpoint, which the authors are careful to label as supervision, not automated verification. They are different things. Those 5 group into zones. Levels 1 and 2 are the autonomous zone, where the loop can decide by itself. Levels 1 through 3 are the objective zone, where the evidence is not a model's opinion. Level 4 is subjective, and level 5 is not verification at all. From a corpus of 50 real loops that researchers coded by hand, 70% verify in the autonomous zone, 76% in the objective zone, 22% use a model as judge, and 2% use a human checkpoint. The rule the ladder gives you is simple. Climb down as far as you can. A goal you can express as the tests pass is qualitatively better than one requiring the code is well written, not because it is more ambitious, but because the loop can decide it without being wrong. And the practical version of that rule is worth stating plainly. When a goal can only be checked at level 4, the fix is usually not a better judge. It is a different goal. Improve test coverage is level 4. Coverage goes from 70 to 80% is level 1. Same intent, completely different loop. Now, why level 4 is dangerous, which is the third part of this chapter. When the same agent that produced the work decides whether the work is done, there is a problem that is structural rather than a matter of model quality. Agents evaluating their own output carry a strong prior that the work is good because they just produced it. That is not fixable with a better prompt. The material used to judge is the same material used to produce in the same context. 3 documented failures follow. Overconfidence, which I just described. Inconsistency across runs, because self-assessment depends on how the context window happens to be populated at the time of evaluation, so the same work evaluated in 2 trajectories gets 2 verdicts. And drift, which is the serious one. When the same model produces and grades the work, the score rises while the quality does not. And this arises spontaneously when generator and judge share context. Nobody has to train the system to cheat. There is a more specific result from research on weak verifiers, and it is the most consequential finding for anyone building loops. With weak verifiers, the verifier's reward never signals a stopping point, even when real quality has already peaked and begun to decline. Translate that into a running loop. It is not merely that the verifier is wrong. It is wrong in the direction of continuing. It keeps saying improve while the work is getting worse. A loop guided by that signal does not stop late by chance. It stops late systematically and burns budget doing it. That is the technical reason the ladder is ordered the way it is. So what do you do instead? 3 mitigations in order of effectiveness. Prefer external verification. A test that passes or fails cannot be persuaded. Climbing down to levels 1 and 2 removes the problem at the root, which is why 70% of real loops live there. Separate the maker from the checker. The worker executes, a distinct checker evaluates whether the stopping condition is met, and a router directs the flow. That separation removes the conflict of interest. Use different models if you can, and importantly, do not share context between them, since shared context is what the research identifies as the trigger. And never let self-assessment be the only criterion. If you need a model's judgment, make it one signal among several, not the one that decides the stop. There is a fair matter of degree here. Self-evaluation is useful for generating hypotheses about what might be wrong and bad for deciding. It is the same distinction you would make in any organization. The person who did the work is best placed to say where the weak points are and worst placed to sign off on it. Now let me close the loop on that gap I asked you to hold. Every conversion from a fuzzy objective to a verifiable proxy opens a distance between what you want and what you measure. If the loop optimizes the proxy hard enough, it will find ways to satisfy it without satisfying the objective. That is reward hacking, and it needs iteration to appear, which is precisely what a loop provides. A single-turn agent never gets the chance. A 50-iteration loop does, which yields an implication the field's own sources rarely state. The objectives we would most like to automate, things like improve the quality of this code, are exactly the ones only checkable at level 4, and therefore the most exposed. And the ones we can check well are the ones with the least value per iteration. So the usefulness of a loop is bounded by the verifiability of its goal, not by the capability of the agent. Better models do not move that ceiling. Let me recap. A stopping condition must be binary, interpretation-free, and anchored to something outside the agent. The verification ladder runs from deterministic checks up to human supervision, and you should climb down as far as you can, reformulating the goal rather than improving the judge. And the maker cannot be the checker, because the score rises while the quality does not, and with weak verifiers, the signal never tells you when to stop. In the next chapter, the controls that keep all of this from becoming an unbounded bill. There is one sentence in this field that I would put above the others, and it is about where the break lives. The thing that stops a runaway loop must live outside the loop, not in the prompt and not in the model's good judgment, in your code, where it cannot be reasoned away. The reason is the case where the break matters. A limit written in a prompt is a suggestion, and a confused agent can reinterpret a suggestion. A limit written in the orchestrator is a guarantee. Those differ precisely when it counts. This chapter covers three things: the ways loops fail in production, the controls that bound them, and the five named ways a loop can end, which turn out to be more useful than they sound. Start with the failures. Loop failures in production trace mostly to four causes: no hard stopping conditions, underspecified goals, context overflow in long sessions, and missing cost controls. All four are design problems. None is fixed by a better model. Now the controls. A ceiling on iterations, a hard cap on steps regardless of what happens, a budget in tokens or money, an upper bound on spend per run, a daily cap per agent, aggregated rather than per run, a limit per tool, so a single tool cannot be called more than a set number of times in one task, and a context size limit, cutting before degradation sets in. One of these deserves singling out because it is cheap, mechanical, and attacks the most common failure. No progress detection. Hash each tool call together with its arguments and terminate when the same call repeats within a recent window. The most common way a loop wastes money is an agent retrying the same thing, and catching that is a few lines of code. A note on defaults. Some frameworks ship a step limit of around 25. That number exists so a runaway loop cannot burn unlimited budget, not because 25 is right for your task. Raise it or lower it deliberately. Now the money, because this is where the field becomes concrete, and the numbers come from someone who runs these daily. Agents consume roughly 4 times the tokens of a standard chat, and up to 15 times in multi-agent systems. His own operation runs on the order of $10,000 a month. He spent around $1,300 just testing the main tools. And the most telling data point. One large technology company burned its annual budget for the year in about 4 months and ended up capping spending at $1,500 per employee per month on artificial intelligence coding tools. That last one matters because it shows the budget problem is real at organizational scale, not just a hobbyist concern. Which leads to a reframing. The budget is not a defensive guardrail. It is a design variable. A loop whose expected cost per run you do not know is a loop you have not finished designing. There is a distinction worth making explicit here, and it connects to the next section. Budget guardrails are the safety net of termination. They guarantee that any failure mode has a hard upper bound on cost and impact. They are not how you expect the loop to end. They are what guarantees it ends if everything else fails. So a diagnostic falls out of that. If your loops routinely end by exhausting their budget, you do not have a budget problem. You have a goal problem. Now, the five terminal states, which is the practice most widely adopted in the field. 74% of the loops in that corpus name their terminal states explicitly, more than name a verifiable goal. Success, the goal was achieved. No op, no change was needed. Blocked, there is an obstacle the loop cannot remove. Stalled, there is no progress. Exhausted, the budget ran out. Why does naming them matter? Without named states, a loop has two outcomes: it finished or it is still running. And that erases distinctions that decide what you do next. Consider the three that are not success. Blocked is valuable information. The loop found something a human must resolve, and it deserves a notification. Stalled is a design problem. The goal or the tools are wrong, and it deserves a review of the specification. Exhausted is a calibration problem. The work was bigger than expected, so adjust the budget or break it up. All three failed, and all three demand different responses. A loop that can only say, "I did not manage it," forces you to investigate every time. Which suggests a metric almost nobody instruments: the distribution of terminal states over time. It is the best health signal a loop has. Many exhausted means the goal is too large. Many stalled means the agent lacks tools. Many blocked means the loop is scoped into territory that is not its business. Many no ops means the trigger fires too often. Mostly success means it is well calibrated. No op deserves a moment on its own because it is the one people do not contemplate when designing. A loop that fires periodically, checking for build failures or outdated dependencies, will often find nothing to do. If you have no state for that, the agent will invent work: cosmetic changes, unrequested refactors, fixes to things that were not broken. Declaring no op as a legitimate and expected ending gives the agent permission to do nothing. And it is one of the cheapest high-impact interventions in scheduled loops. Notice how the terminal states map onto the controls. Success comes from the verifiable success condition. No op from that condition already being satisfied at the start. Blocked from the agent detecting and declaring it. Stalled from no progress detection. And exhausted from the caps. The last three are guardrails and must live outside the loop. Only blocked depends partly on the agent's judgment, which is exactly why it should be paired with a hard cap in case the agent does not notice it is stuck. One more piece of control, which is memory. A loop crosses many context windows, and each iteration may start with an agent that remembers nothing. Without a memory mechanism, the loop does not accumulate. It repeats. The solution that one is deliberately crude and comes from the Ralph technique. Progress lives in files and in version control, not in the context window. Files hold the current state, readable and editable by both the agent and you. Version control holds the history and, critically, the ability to revert. That ability is what makes it tolerable to leave a loop unattended. If each iteration leaves a commit, no iteration can irreversibly destroy the work of the ones before it. What to store? The goal as originally stated, what is done and verified with its evidence, decisions and their reasons, constraints discovered along the way, artifacts as paths rather than contents, and what was tried and failed. That last one is the most commonly omitted and the most expensive to omit. Without a record of failures, each new agent walks down the dead end the previous one already explored. In a loop running overnight, that can be most of the spend. This is also the least mature component of the field. Only about a third of the loops in that corpus develop persistent memory at all. Let me recap. The break must live outside the loop in code. because a prompt is a suggestion and the agent that needs stopping is the one that is confused. The budget is a design variable, not a defensive afterthought, and if loops routinely exhaust it, the problem is the goal. And naming the five ways a loop can end turns a single failure signal into a diagnosis, with no-op being the one nobody plans for. In the final chapter, when any of this is worth doing, and the argument about whether it deserves to be called a discipline at all. Suppose you accept everything so far. The question left is the practical one: should you build a loop for this? Three things in this final chapter. A concrete test for that decision, the argument about whether any of this deserves to be called a discipline, and an honest account of what the field does not know. Start with the test. The most usable criterion comes from someone who runs loops daily, and it has four conditions, all of which must hold. 1. The task repeats at least weekly. A loop is amortized infrastructure. If the task happens once, building the loop costs more than doing it. 2. A machine can reject the bad output. There is an automated verifier, tests, linters, a build. Without this, there is no loop, only repetition. 3. The budget absorbs the wasted iterations. You can afford the failed retries, because there will be some. 4. The agent has a senior engineer's tools. Logs, an environment where it can reproduce the problem, the ability to execute code. The second condition rejects the most candidates, and it is the same one this recording keeps returning to. The lists of what works and what does not are fairly consistent across sources. Recommended: triaging build failures, dependency updates, lint and fix, reproducing flaky tests. Discouraged: architectural rewrites, authentication and payment code, production deployments, and subjective decisions. Look at the pattern rather than the items. The recommended ones are mechanical, reversible, and checkable at the bottom of the verification ladder. The discouraged ones fail at least one of those three. I would add a fifth condition of my own, about you rather than the task. Could you review the output if you wanted to? Not will you, but is the volume and complexity within what your team can actually read. A loop producing more than anyone can review is generating a specific debt by construction, and none of the four conditions catches it. Which brings me to the risks that the field's own advocates name, and this is the part I would not want you to miss. The first is comprehension debt, the growing gap between what exists in your system and what you actually understand of it. The analogy with technical debt is exact in the part that matters, which is that it is paid later and with interest. Nothing goes wrong while the system works. The cost arrives when something breaks and you must intervene in code nobody on your team has read. And unlike technical debt, it is invisible. A badly designed module can be spotted by reading it, while a perfectly designed module that nobody understands looks exactly like one everybody understands. The second is cognitive surrender, the slow temptation to stop having an opinion and simply accept what the loop returns. This one is specific to loops. An interactive agent forces you to decide at every turn, so judgment is built into the workflow. A loop removes those decision points by design, and with them, the occasions on which you exercised criteria. The word slow in that definition is the important one. It is not a decision you make. It is a position you arrive at after 20 consecutive iterations went fine. The mechanism runs like this. The loop is right often, so reviewing starts to feel like wasted time, so you review superficially, and it keeps being right, and the times it is not, you do not find out. Eventually, you stop having a prior expectation of what should come out. And that is the real damage, because evaluating an output requires an expectation to compare against. Without one, review becomes reading, and reading something plausible always feels satisfying. The most useful formulation I found gives a criterion instead of just a warning. Designing with judgment accelerates you. Designing to avoid thinking sabotages you. And the complement? The loop does not know the difference between accelerating your understanding and bypassing it. You do. Which means the same tool, used with the same intensity, produces opposite results depending on the intent behind it. That is uncomfortable, because it is not verifiable from outside. There is no metric that detects it, only honesty. It is worth noting that these two risks are named by the favorable sources, not just the critics. The one academic paper in this field lists them among three fundamental constraints of the practice, and the most sympathetic practitioner account says explicitly that they matter more than the token bill. That deserves emphasis. The conversation about loops usually revolves around cost, and the person who uses them most says cost is not the main problem. Now, the argument about whether this is a discipline. The critics say a coding agent is already a loop, so an outer loop adds nothing beyond please continue. They say the technical reduction to a while loop around a model call is accurate. They say DMOS hide how much steering real work requires. And they say that if you cannot define done and correct, drawing it as a loop or as a graph makes no difference. You have built a prettier way to fail. The defenders say those criticisms land on weak loops, ones without verifiers and without spend caps. They say the novelty is the specification, not the loop. And they say there is genuine leverage when there is an independent verifier. What I find most useful is where they agree, because that is what you can treat as settled. Both sides say most people do not need loops yet. Both say that without automated verification, there is nothing. Both name the human risks. Both say the cost is underestimated. And both say loops do not replace direct prompting. A subject where advocates and skeptics agree on five substantive points is not as divided as it appears. The real disagreement is about the name and the scope, not the facts. My own reading is that two claims get conflated. The strong claim, that this is the next discipline and everyone should adopt it, does not survive contact with the evidence. The weak claim, that there is a set of design decisions determining whether a loop works or burns money and it helps to have vocabulary for them, holds comfortably. And the weak claim is where the value is. The verification ladder, the five terminal states and the four-point test are useful thinking tools even if you never build an automated loop, because they apply just as well to deciding how much to delegate inside an interactive session. So instead of asking whether it is a discipline, ask, is my goal mechanically verifiable? If it is, you have a candidate and the vocabulary helps. If it is not, no amount of loop engineering will save you, and that is precisely what both camps are saying. Finally, what nobody knows. The empirical base is thin. One corpus of 50 loops is all the quantitative evidence there is. It is good work, and it is small, biased toward loops somebody chose to publish and coded by the authors themselves. There are no comparative studies and no replications. The human risks are named, but not measured. Nobody has quantified comprehension debt or shown that the proposed mitigations work. 78% of loops are triggered manually, and only 22% use automated triggers. The paper notes this without explaining it. Is that justified caution, immaturity of practice, or a sign that genuinely autonomous loops do not work yet? The answer would change how you value the field, and it is not there. Memory is the weakest component, with only a third of loops developing anything persistent, and no established practice on when to prune it or how to keep it from eroding. And nobody publishes the distribution of terminal states, which would be the most informative health metric a loop has. Let me close with what survives. If you cannot say what done and correct means in a checkable way, you do not have a loop. The break belongs outside the loop, in code. The maker cannot be the checker. Climb down the verification ladder rather than improving the judge, and build it as someone who intends to stay the engineer, not the person who presses go.